Krishna Gopagopa. Om Ganatimananda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Meditam Yenatas Mai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, who has so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while we were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're continuing our study with the Bhagavad Gita, of the Bhagavad Gita. And so we're on chapter 4. Just a few questions I have for all of you, just to see if you've been paying attention. How many sections of the Bhagavad Gita divided into? Three. And which chapters are in which section? That's easy.
The first section is chapters 1 through 6.
Right.
The second one, 7 through 7 plus 13. And the rest are
12. Yeah, then, okay. Then 13 through
18.
Got it. Okay. And so what do the first six chapters deal with? There's three topics of the Gita: Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. And the first section deals with Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means what? Work for Krishna. Because yoga, to connect, karma means work. And then the second section is what section? Jnana? Uh-oh. I guess you're going to go to the Brahma Jyoti then. So the second section is Bhakti Yoga. Because the way you can remember that is, did anyone ever eat an Oreo cookie when they were young? Some of the kids know what I'm talking about. An Oreo cookie has one in the center. The cream sweet filling. And the outside is, it's all right. But not so nice. Not as nice, sorry. It's nice, but not as nice. Or a sandwich. The nice stuff is in the middle, and you got to eat the bread just to get to the nice stuff. So, and then the last six chapters are what? Jnana Yoga, okay. So it's divided into three, and so we're on chapter 4, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. And so we're going to find out about different types of transcendental knowledge, and how do we get to transcendental knowledge, how to avoid material knowledge, and the benefits of transcendental knowledge. So first we're going to look at, again, at the yoga ladder. And this is, it's more than just the yoga ladder depicted here. It's the ladder of consciousness. So we have the consciousness of animal life. Of course, we're not specifically just referring to animals, because there's a lot of people in human bodies who are like animals, right? Because what do the animals do? Eat, sleep, make an event. And we have some interesting politicians who do that too in our country. But I won't get into the details. Because we're not supposed to talk about religious things from the pulpit. We lose our tax-exempt status. But we should look for leaders. Here's a non-political message. We should look for leaders that uphold the highest moral standards, instead of the lowest common denominator. So after animal life, you get to the karma kanda, human life, which is basically people still trying to enjoy, but, you know, they're doing it in a Vedic way. So it's good. At least it's something, because they're recognizing that there's a higher power or a higher entity, or there's God. And then we get to karma yoga, and two types of karma yoga. One is performed with kama, with desire. Karma yoga means to connect to Krishna through work. And then nishkama, without any desire. Then jnana yoga, which is to cultivate knowledge of the Supreme and to understand that what is not this body. Then you also have ashtanga yoga. It doesn't always go in this particular direction between the yogas. I mean, sometimes you flip. First you do ashtanga yoga, then you do jnana yoga. Or first you do Ashtanga Yoga, then Karma Yoga. But Ashtanga Yoga, Ashta Anga, means eight limbs. So it's like the limbs of Asana, Pranayam, Pachahara, Dharana, Jhana, and Samadhi. I'm not going to get into this Sthanga Yoga now. And then after that, you get to Brahman realization or Paramatma realization. And finally, Bhakti Yoga, in which you get Bhagavan realization. You realize God is a person and he has personal interactions in the spiritual world of five different types. What are the types? Nobody knows. Shanta, that means peaceful. What does it mean?
Neutral.
Yeah, but what is it? Give me an example of Well, now give an example of how one would approach God and Shanta Ras.
Studying the Upanishads.
Yeah. What would one's mood be? Is anyone on reverence? Yeah, just basically that God in Shanta Ras, God is great, and he's more or less the order supplier. Nicho nichanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bhavanam yavadadati kamam. Or that's the Vedic version, and in the West we say, my dear Lord, give us this day our daily pakora, right? You ever hear that saying before? No. No. Pizza. Okay, so that's the Western version of Shanta Ras, where God is our order supplier. And then after Shanta Ras, there's what? Dasha. Where what? We're servants of Krishna. And that's actually begins, at that point, one's constitutional position begins to be realized. In other words, everybody, no matter what their relationship with Krishna is, has that attitude of service towards Krishna, even if you go as high as the Madhurya Ras. So then after Dasha Ras, there's what? Sakya. You become Krishna's friend. You can like, who's an example of Krishna's friend? Arjuna. We're reading Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna would sit on the same bed with Krishna, put his arm around Krishna and say, hey, buddy. And that's intimate friendship, right?
Sudama,
and there's other, Subal, Sudama. That's nice, isn't it? When you can go to God and just, you know, give him a punch on the shoulder and say, how are you doing? How are you doing, Krishna? You don't say, how are you doing, God. Good. If you remembered he was God, you wouldn't do that. How are you doing, God? No. So, and then after this Sakya Ras, there's what? Vatsalya, which is parental relationship. Who's an example of a parental relationship? Yashoda Mayi. And then finally, what? I almost said. Madhurya Ras, and who's an example? Radharani, Srimati Radharani, the gopis, like that. They're examples, and they serve Krishna in the most intimate way. So even within the Bhagavan realization, there's higher stages. And even within Madhurya Ras, and I won't get into the details, there's higher stages of Madhurya Ras. Mm. So that's the general explanation of the yoga ladder. So a general overview of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, nobody's taking notes, is the first 10 chapters, and we're going to go verse by verse as we normally do and give you an opportunity to read the Bhagavad Gita. First chapter, 10 verses explain about Krishna, transcendental knowledge about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The next five, explain how to apply that transcendental knowledge. It's very systematic. When you look at it this way, you can see how Krishna has presented everything in a very systematic form. And the next 9 and from 16 to 24, how to understand karma on the platform of jnana or transcendental knowledge. 25 to 33 is sacrifices leading to transcendental knowledge. And 34 to 42 is the glories of transcendental knowledge. So all this, the whole chapter has to do with transcendental knowledge. So first verse, who is going to read the first verse? Any volunteers? So, Bhagavad Gita. First verse is...
The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vibhishan, and Vibhishan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ishvara.
Very nice. And so Here's a question for all of you. What personality of Godhead appeared in this line coming down from Vivaswan, Manu, Ikshvaku?
Ram.
And what dynasty is this?
Suryavansi.
Oh, that's easy. There's the sun. And right now we have a upswing in the sunspot cycle, right? So Vivaswan is giving us some mercy. Okay. And so Lord Ram appeared in that dynasty. And the next, well, let's go to text 2. Okay, text 2. Someone should read that.
The supreme science was thus received through the chain of the cyclic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it appears to be lost.
So this is an extremely important point, which Srila Prabhupada stressed over and over and over again, which is the point of disciplic succession. One of the most important verses in the Gita, Evam Parampara Praptam, Imam Raja Shayo Vidhu. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example, I'm going to ask all of you what this example is. What example did Srila Prabhupada give about passing transcendental knowledge down carefully? And I'll give you an example. It has something to do with a tree. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's before they had cherry pickers, you know, that machine where you could just go up in the ground and put all the mangoes in a basket. They would pass it down hand to hand very, very carefully, because if one person didn't handle it properly, the mango was finished and you couldn't sell it. Same thing with transcendental knowledge. Krishna mentioned at the last part of this verse that this disciplic succession, which Krishna started before, became broken. Because there was some body or some group of people who didn't pass the knowledge down purely. To pass knowledge down purely, there's two requisites. One is you have to repeat properly, and the other one is you have to have proper behavior. That's acharya. So it's not that you, it's not something that's simply theoretical, that you can just pass it down by repeating the words, but you have to realize the knowledge by following the knowledge, because we're talking about jnana and vijnana, knowledge, that is, book knowledge and realization. So, next book, text. And so there's a qualification, or there are qualifications of a person who is able to receive this knowledge. And what are those qualifications? Who's going to read? Read.
That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend, and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science.
So this knowledge is not like ordinary knowledge that can be understood regardless of your qualifications, as long as you have a good memory and you can process things. It's knowledge that has to be revealed in the heart as it's being transmitted by the external manifestation of Supersoul. Who's the external manifestation of Supersoul? Spiritual Master. So, but there's also the other ingredient, which is Supersoul in the heart. So Supersoul in the heart has to be pleased with you. And therefore, you could read transcendental knowledge, and if Supersoul in the heart is not pleased with you, you won't understand a whit of it. And for Super Soul to be pleased with you, I mean, Krishna gives the two basic points here, that you have to be a devotee and his friend. So most of us right now, we're not really that devoted, so how can we call ourselves devotees? And I don't know, we're Krishna's friends. So what do? We have to take shelter of someone who is Krishna's devotee and friend. And this is brought out in the Bhagavatam in this very interesting verse. Rahuganaita tapasa nayati nachesya nirvapanad grahadva nachandasa naiva jalagni surya vana mahatpada rajobhishekam. That one cannot understand this or become Krishna conscious by executing austerities, studying the Vedic literatures, being a perfect brahmachari, perfect householder, perfect sannyasi, but only by taking the dust of the feet of a pure devotee. And in this way, one can understand. So even though we may not be on the same platform as Arjuna, and certainly I can say I'm not on the same platform as Arjuna, if we serve and take the dust, what does it mean? Oh, I have to describe what it means to take the dust, because in the West, this is kind of freaky for people. I mean, I was just speaking to someone that it was very interesting. We were having this discussion about how to present Krishna consciousness, and they were at someone's house, you know, one of our sannyasis in the Krishna consciousness movement, and one of their disciples, they were at a Western person's house, one of their disciples grabbed the remnants of their food from the plate and started eating it. So in the West, you know, that's not exactly something that's accepted, respected. People get upset, right? So, of course, there is spiritual benefit from taking the remnants of the food of a great devotee, the dust of the feet, and also the foot bathing water, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. But you have to be careful where you do that, because it could create doubts and problems in people's minds. But really, the most important aspect is to take shelter of the transcendental sound vibration, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, Chitete Kori Akya, coming from the mouth of a pure devotee. So when one does that, even if one is subjected to the defects of this material world, one is not yet at the platform being a great devotee or a devotee of Krishna, then one can receive this transcendental knowledge by the mercy of Krishna's pure devotee. If you take the mercy, that's another point. Like, the mercy of Krishna's devotee is the same as Krishna's mercy. It's equal to everyone. As Krishna says in the Gita, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dvesho Stina Priyaha, that he's equal to everyone. So Krishna's pure devotee is also equal to everyone. But some people accept and some people don't. So everyone has Srila Prabhupada's mercy. It's just a question of ourselves accepting that mercy from Srila Prabhupada. So even though we may not be so friendly with Krishna now, you know, we get upset with him sometimes, what he does. Right, I told that story when we first started the temple. I was upset it was raining so much because I couldn't start the temple. This is 1985, before any of you were born. So, not actually 1982. So, and I was upset with Krishna. That's not a very friendly attitude to have. Why is it raining? Of course, I was more upset with Indra than Krishna. So, even so, if we take shelter and devote our lives to the service of a pure devotee, such as Srila Prabhupada, then we can understand the knowledge of the Gita. So, Arjuna has a doubt here, because Krishna's his buddy, and Krishna's basically saying, millions of years ago, I did this. Huh? I mean, just like if I said to Jagat Guru, you know, I remember millions of years ago, you know, I was taking a spaceship, you know, as part of Star Wars or something, I guess. Visiting all the planets. Jagat Guru would say, huh? You know, I know you're older than me. And I know you've been following a good diet, you know, to keep yourself young, you know. Everything, but, huh? It's not possible. You know, he looked at me with disbelief. You know, now you're speaking what's called hyperbole. You're speaking, you know, exaggeration. You know, maybe 20 years ago you did something. You watched a movie. But not several million years ago. So Krishna is saying this, and Arjuna is just going, huh? You know, try to understand, try to picture Arjuna's emotional response at this point to that. It would be the same as if I said, you know, I was doing something several million years ago. You know, I was with the cavemen, the Neanderthals, in the same body. Or I remember fighting the dinosaurs. You know, it was fun. Before I opened up New Goloka. It would be... You would say, you know, he's challenged a little bit. He called for the psychiatrist. So someone should read text 4, which is Arjuna's doubt. Okay.
Arjuna said, the son of Akhilasan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you expected the sons to him?
So it's obvious what Arjuna is asking, you know, that sun god appeared millions of years ago and you're the same age as me. Yeah, we're friends. And you see in the interaction between Krishna and the Pandavas that Yudhisthira was actually older in an external sense than Krishna, right? Because when Krishna approached Yudhisthira, what did he do? He touched his feet. And Bhima was older than Krishna. So you see, and then Krishna and Arjuna roughly the same age. And during the battle of Kurukshetra, how many years had Krishna been on the planet? That's a more precise question. 125 years. Because he had a transcendental body, and because people lived longer. How long did people live in the previous age?
1,000 years.
And even in the Bible, you have some information about that, isn't it? Anyone's heard of Methuselah? How long did he live for? 900 and something years. Even Moses lived a long time. How many years did he live? I forget. About 600 years. Pretty good, isn't it? But in this age, the maximum is usually about 100. You know, after 100, it's all downhill. Anyway, so Arjuna is expressing his disbelief here. How can the sun god be young? And Arjuna is in this way under the influence of Yogamaya, because Yogamaya covers the devotees so that they forget that Krishna is God and so they can interact with him in an intimate way. He's giving Krishna an opportunity to speak more about himself. Because if he didn't ask that question, Krishna wouldn't be able to speak about himself. And Krishna answers in the fifth verse. Sorry. So what's the fifth verse say?
Personality of God has said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy.
Mm. And so the sixth verse goes with that, too. So let's read the sixth verse, too. Whoops, sorry. Sixth verse. Who wants to read the sixth verse?
Although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form.
So these two verses are like a pair, because Krishna tells Arjuna why he remembers and also indicates indirectly, as Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, why we forget. Why do we forget? Material body. We're changing our bodies. And every time you change your gross body, you forget what happened in the last life, unless you have an expert astrologer, he can remind you. And sometimes there's people do remember little bits and pieces. But in any case, when you change your body, you forget. And if you keep your body, you remember. And Krishna is his body. We are not our body. That's the difference. And Krishna appears in the same... So Krishna really defeats the Mayavad conception. Mayavad conception means that everything is Maya, including Krishna's transcendental form. So Krishna here is saying that my form is eternal. Does anybody here have an eternal body? I mean, that I can see. Anybody in the room? You have a spiritual body that I can't see. That's there. You just have to realize it. It's covered. It's covered. Just like a glove covers the hand. And what happens when the glove covers the hand? Your sense of touch is very much reduced. Right? Depending upon the thickness of the glove. Well, we got a real heavy thickness on top of our soul. And so our experience of this world is filtered by the glove-like gross and subtle bodies that are covering our soul. So, as it's stated here, Mayavadi is defeated. I mean, if you ever want to talk with a Mayavadi, the person who says, Krishna's body is Maya, everything is Maya, you're Maya, I'm Maya, we're all Maya, that's a Mayavadi. A philosophy of Maya. Maya means illusion. If you ever talk with the Mayavadi, just and he believes in the Gita, just saying, you know, Krishna says this in the Gita, his body is transcendental. What are you going to say about that? I mean, I had a discussion, many discussions with Mayavadis, with some big Brahmanas once. Where is this? Oh, in Nepal. We went to a temple in Nepal, and they said, Krishna's body is mundane. And I said, why? Krishna says this. And then I quoted a few verses from Bhagavad Gita, and even though they were Sanskrit scholars, they just had to accept defeat. So Mayavadis think Krishna's body is fully spiritual. He appears exactly as he exists in the spiritual world. And therefore, as we said, he remembers everything. And he's not forced to take birth by his karma. We are forced to take birth by our karma and by our desire. Two things. We mentioned that before, one of the previous classes. That if you have a reaction to something, either good or bad, then you're forced to take birth. But he comes, anyway, we'll find out when he comes. But he chooses to come. And so, in text 7 to 8, we find out when Krishna comes, where he comes, why he comes, and how he comes. What, when, where, why, and how. Who's going to read those two verses?
O descendant of Bharata, a predominant rise of irreligion. At that time I descend myself.
And let's read 8 as a pair.
To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion.
Okay, very good. So an answer to the when question, whenever irreligion arises. So I have a question for all of you. Has irreligion arisen? No, I mean, everything's very pious. Our politicians, again, I touch upon that, are extremely pious. You know, their marriages are very strong and they never fool around or anything like that, right? And they're vegetarians, they offer all their food to Krishna, right? The Brahminical principles are being followed, right? At least that's what I've seen. So why hasn't Krishna appeared? What's the answer to that? What?
Is that appearing in the form of his name?
Yes. Because Krishna, you can't tell Krishna how he should appear. He decides on the most effective method to appear. And in Kali Yuga, if Krishna, let's say Krishna appeared right now playing his flute, would people accept that much? Or what would it do? I mean, people would just take him as another Bollywood star, basically. Right? Because people's span of attention, Manda Sumanda Matayo, Manda Bhagyu Padrata, and Kali Yuga is so short. He'd be number one on the hit parade for about a week. And then they'd go on to someone else. So they're not much interested in philosophy in Kali Yuga. So therefore Krishna appears through the mantra avatar. Mantra Murti. The Murti, the form of the mantra. And so Krishna has appeared. And so where does he appear? Anywhere he needs to appear within the three worlds, which means the material world, to accomplish this particular purpose. And why does he appear? To establish religion and also to annihilate the miscreants, protect the devotees. And how? He does this by delivering the pious and annihilating the miscreants. So, therefore, we can also understand another question that Prabhupada gives is that another answer that Krishna, the Prashila Prabhupada gives, is that Krishna himself personally doesn't have to do it. He can do this through his devotees, through his energies, through other means, because Krishna is aptakama. Whatever he wants gets accomplished automatically. He has so many servants. And so the reason Krishna comes down, the internal reason Krishna comes down himself to do these things is that he wants to show us what he's like in the spiritual world so we can become attracted to him. Because without that superior attraction, we're not going to give up our interactions or attempt for pleasures in this world, right? Without seeing how nice Krishna is. So Krishna comes down and shows us, and the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is dedicated to talking about Krishna's pastimes. Okay, and then text 9 is about how to attain liberation from this world. Who's going to read text 9? So, knowing doesn't mean theoretical knowing, it means to actually have faith in that. Because if you know, if you believe, if you have trust in Krishna's transcendental activity, you'll want to go there. But if you're thinking, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, then you're not going to, then you want to go to Disneyland instead and see some mouse. Right? But if you actually have implicit shraddha or faith, then at that point you're convinced. So faith is very, very important and a necessary part of knowing the transcendental nature of Krishna. And then you get liberated. You go back to home, back to Godhead, because you know you want to go there and you follow the process for going there. Text 10 takes you from just liberation to what we call bhava or emotion or even prema. So who's going to read text 10?
Being free from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, hearing the from the past, become purified by knowledge, and thus they all attain transcendental offering.
So in text 9, we have the offering of liberation, right? Not taking birth again in this material world. And then in text 10, we have the offering of prema, actually more than bhava, just prema, or love of Krishna. So this is Krishna's upping the ante, so to speak. And text, I know you're all interested in this one, especially in the middle of the winter here in North Carolina. I was just in Philadelphia, it's colder there. They just had an ice storm. So text 10, let's read that. This is, one must be free from these things. So, no, it's text 10. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. No, but text, yeah, you're right. Text 10 also says one must be free from raga, which is like lust or a desire to enjoy this material world and attachment to this world. And vaya. Fear. Children will like this one. And what? Krodha. Anger. Okay. And then, so text 11, we find out how to apply transcendental knowledge. Text 11, would someone like to read? So, this is an important verse, too. In this verse, the text 11 is actually misconstrued because people quote this verse, yayatamam prapajante tam sataiva bhajamiham. They say that they quote that everybody is on the same path. You ever hear this before? They misquote this verse. We're all on the same path. Whatever you do, you're going to arrive at the same destination. Yatomat tatopat, I'm okay, you're okay. There's different expressions you hear in India and also in the West about these things. So they misunderstand this verse, thinking whatever you do, you're going to arrive at the same destination. And sometimes we give the example that you may go to the airport, but it's not that whatever ticket you buy, you will go to the same place. You know, if you buy a ticket to go to Los Angeles, I just came back from Los Angeles, you go to Los Angeles. You buy a ticket to go to Fiji, you go to Fiji. So in one sense, everybody's at the airport. So in one sense, they're following the path of flying around. Another example I give is that on a single path, let's say we're on the road here, well, let's take Interstate 95, that's more interesting. Interstate 95 is one path. It goes from all the way north, north of New York, to all the way south, to Miami. So you may be on the same path, but one person may be suffering in Boston, right? Sorry about that. And another person may be enjoying the surf in Miami. But you're all on the same path. So being on the same path doesn't mean that you're going in the same direction either. So different, and Krishna is indicating here that he's reciprocating different spiritual aspirants or people who want spiritual things receive different benefits. And everyone, in one sense, is on that path, either going down or going up. So in this way, Krishna is speaking. So, and text 12, we hear about people doing different types of worship. This is another famous verse. Who wants to read text 12?
Men in this world desire success and furtive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world.
So one comparison that Srila Prabhupada made to worshiping the demigods is bribing people. You get quick results. And I've had a lot of experience, not in America with bribing, but some other country. You really get quick results. I mean, you get a telephone line installed in 2 days. You can go the wrong way down the highway if you like. One time I was in Jagannath Puri. We had a whole tour bus, we wanted to take our bus to a hotel, and it wasn't allowed to take the buses to the hotel. So the police stopped us. So we said, all right, here's some rupees. The police said, all right, we'll give you an escort to take the bus to the hotel. So quick results. Now, fortunately, the government or the people who passed the law or the judges weren't omniscient. So in that way, sometimes it is more effective to get quick results. But in the cosmological scale, it's not more effective because Krishna is watching. As we'll hear later on in the Gita, his eyes and ears are everywhere. He has like we have a camera here, internet camera. Krishna has internet connections everywhere. High-speed internet, HD, you know, video everywhere. And ears everywhere. So, therefore, the worship of demigods, Krishna is watching you when you do something that he said later on in the Gita. He says, "Avidhi purvakam," it's not the right method. And so he's watching you, and he's waiting for you also. He says, when is this fool going to do the right thing? Because he's going to get quick results, but the results are not going to make him happy. It's like Christmas. When you get a present, you know, you enjoy it, you open it up, and then after that you're miserable and arguing with each other. Right? You know, I've seen people, they get Christmas presents, and all the kids are really happy, you know. A dinosaur that moves, oh, like that. And then 2 weeks later, the thing is torn in pieces. Quick results, but misery. And then worship Krishna, it takes a little longer, but good things take a little longer. But you get permanent purification and permanent happiness. So that's the difference between worship of Krishna and the demigods. So you get what you ask for. And 13th verse states... What? Anyone can read it?
According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable.
There's another important verse, because many people criticize what they call the caste system. And the caste system, we don't believe in the caste system either, where people are assigned a certain role according to their birth. Krishna here states that people take different activities or follow different paths in society according to their psychophysical nature, jnana karma, and according to their position. It's described here, guna karma vivagasha, their quality and their work. So Krishna is saying that this is the way to organize society, to keep society peaceful. Now you may ask, what is this doing in the chapter of transcendental knowledge? Krishna is telling us how one can proceed in organizing society so people can focus on transcendental knowledge. Because if you are dissatisfied materially, you're not going to be able to chant or engage in the other activities of spiritual life. I mean, if you're hungry, how can you sit down and read Bhagavad Gita or be interested in like that? Or if you're doing a job, let's say your nature is that you're a farmer by nature, which is a very nice occupation. Nowadays, of course, in America, you want to send everyone to the university, and so they become over-sophisticated, and they think they're too good to be farmers, right? And so therefore, they have to import people to do the farming in America, because the Americans would think, I'm too educated, too sophisticated. But guess who was a Vaishya, or appeared in a Vaishya family, or worked in a Vaishya way? Krishna. Krishna took care of the cows. If it's good enough for Krishna, it should be good enough for you, right? So you're thinking, I'm sophisticated, I'm a computer programmer, and I'm so happy sitting at a desk all day long, getting diabetes, heart disease. If you're out taking care of the cows, you'd be healthy. So therefore, to understand how to keep people healthy and happy, satisfied in this world so they can do spiritual life, it's important to understand people's psychophysical nature. Arjuna, he was a Kshatriya, which means administration, protection, like that. Vaishya means farmer, trader. Shudra means labor. There's nothing wrong with being a Shudra. You know, nowadays it's turned into a derogatory term, isn't it? You say, oh, he's just a Shudra. But a Shudra is one who can love the Lord and serve the Lord. I mean, I was just reading the Ramayana, and all the Shudras in Ayodhya, they were so attached to Lord Ram that when Lord Ram wanted to leave the world, what did they do? They wanted to go with him. And so he allowed them. They all marched into the Sarayu River with Lord Ram, and they attained spiritual bodies, and they all went back to Godhead with Lord Ram. Pretty good, isn't it? And Lord Ram not only had great devotees who were of different castes, he even had animals, monkeys, bears. I mean, Krishna is an equal opportunity God. Right? He's not racist, sexist. He loves all living entities. So, anyway, there's nothing wrong. You know, there's nothing wrong with working. It's probably healthier for you than sitting in a chair all day long. Right? And so anyway, everyone has their own particular propensity, and Krishna is establishing that this will enable society to be stable and people to be able to think about spiritual life. And there's the spiritual orders too. The sannyasi, vanaprastha, grahastha, brahmachari. Brahmachari is student, grahastha is householder, vanaprastha is retired, not playing golf so much as they used to. And yeah, nowadays, isn't it? I'm retired. Just like I was just somewhere and I've seen all the retired people playing with the remote control planes. Yeah, true. I mean, we call them geezers. Anyway, so, you know, people my age. So, they're retired. And when they could be chanting Hare Krishna, they were just like dive bombing, having fights with their remote control planes or playing golf. Like Prabhupada said about golf, he said, what is the use? It's just hitting a ball until it goes into a hole. If you think about it, just hit, 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 hit. Okay. I hit it less times than you did. I win. Huh? So, anyway. So Vanaprastha means retired and going, staying in a holy place, serving Krishna with your family, with your wife. And sannyas means traveling widely. So this is the Varnashram system. So that's all we have time for today in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So anyone have any questions or comments about anything we mentioned in the class? Yeah. Yeah, yada. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Krishna decides on the schedule. Just like if someone says to me, I want to see you, I'll make the decision when you'll see me. It's a schedule. I said your schedule, just like I'm going over to someone's house next Saturday for breakfast, right? So I decided. It's not that I'm forced. So Krishna decides on the schedule because he sees what's best for people. He's using his intelligence. He appears whenever he wants. He makes the schedule. He's very punctual. Krishna doesn't believe in IST. Indian Standard Time. Krishna's on GMT. Greenwich Meridian Time, yeah. Krishna doesn't need a quartz watch or. He is time. And if he decides he wants to wait a little while, he just slows down time a little bit, turns on the knob, and he's still on time. Just like you see sometimes these movies where someone gets in a car and they travel in time. Anyway. I'm not going to mention the names of these movies. Or when I was young, they had this, H.G. Wells, The Time Machine? You ever see that? He got in this machine and there was a big spinning disc behind him. You saw that? No one's seen that movie?
Yeah.
The big spinning disc, he could put a lever, warn. He goes in the future, sees the results of the atomic war, then goes back, falls in love, you know. Anyway. So Krishna. Krishna's not bound by time. He makes his own schedule, and he can adjust things accordingly. If Krishna decides, you know, I don't want to appear in Kali Yuga, people are too degraded. He could do that too, but he's too compassionate to forget about appearing in Kali Yuga or forget about giving us the holy name. Krishna's not bound, yeah. He makes the schedule. So any other questions or comments? Yes, Rishikesh.
You say,
Tattvata. Knows me in truth.
Actual realization, or if you can accept the knowledge from Bhagavad Gita, is it Tattvata?
Yeah, if one accepts and has full faith, that's Tattvata. Because if one has full faith, what happens when one has full faith? Shradasha, Devasha, Shakahe, Sudrita, Nischya, that one has that trust, implicit trust, that just by serving Krishna, everything will be accomplished. I mean, that's. That I'll get everything I need just by doing this. But we don't have that full faith. We think, well, I need to do this, you know, maybe this demigod, you know, just don't want to get him angry with me. So let me worship Indra. Of course, probably none of you worship Indra. Or let me worship another demigod just to hedge my bets. You ever heard of hedging your bets? What is hedging your bets? Does anyone know?
You bet on both sides.
You bet on both sides. Heads I win, tails you lose. You ever hear that expression before? So you hedge your bets. Well, maybe if it's not right in Bhagavad Gita, at least, you know, let me put all these other deities on my altar too at the same time, you know. In case, you know, just in case. Like that. But one who has firm faith, ekeha kurunandana, has this firm determination and faith, then he'll do what has to be done to go back to God, and he'll fix his mind in the right way. It's just conviction. By faith, you can move mountains. That's what it really means. Like, you see that in Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada had firm faith in the order of his spiritual master in Krishna, so he was able to do things that would frighten us to death. Like, the, you know, in old age, getting in a boat with no, basically no money, like $10 worth of rupees, and they didn't have black market at that time, so they couldn't exchange the rupees, just with some books. You know, when we go somewhere, what do we want? We want to have, like, extra money with us, traveler's checks, right? Does anybody here ever travel without any money? Without any credit cards? With just some books? Anyone here ever do that? That's faith. What's that?
Not just the
Rada. Yeah, that's true. But that was under Prabhupada's instruction. But Prabhupada had so much faith. So faith moves mountains. It gets you to do things, to perform miracles when you have